A beardless boy kneels by a brook. His knees are muddy. His hands are wet. If he were looking at his reflection, he would notice his handsome features, hair the color of copper, a face that steals the breath of Hebrew maidens. But he's not looking at his reflection. He's feeling for rocks, stones, actually, round stones. The giant stares at him from the hillside. Only disbelief keeps him from laughing. He has been terrorizing an entire army, snarling at them like the champion of the World Wrestling Federation. What transpires then changed the history of a nation. What transpires then becomes one of the most famous stories for the past 3,000 years. But most importantly, what transpires then is a model to help you deal with the greatest challenges of your life. Would you open your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 17? 1 Samuel chapter 17. The very famous snapshot today of David and Goliath. It is a story that Samuel breaks into about 5 or 6 different scenes. But each one of them not only is enlightening as far as following the story, but each one of them are loaded, impregnated with meaning for you and for me as we live out our lives. The first scene, sort of giving us the context, is the first 11 verses. Samuel writes, "Now the Philistines gathered their armies and for battle. And they were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah. And they camped between Succoth and Azekah in the Ephes Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered, and they camped in the valley of Elah. And they drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley in between them." That's the setting. The lifetime enemy of Israel, the Philistines. They're on one side on a mountain or a hill. Then there's a long flat valley, and then the other side, and there's where the army of Israel is. We're introduced now to the real problem in verse 4. "And then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath. His height was 6 cubits and a span." That's a problem. 9 feet, 9 inches. He makes Shaquille O'Neal look like a jockey. Notice this man. He is Goliath from Gath. You see, when Joshua conquered the Promised Land, there were only 3 cities that they really didn't conquer: Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod. Gath became sort of the center for the Philistinian resistance. Gath grows giants like Yosemite grows sequoias. They're known for how big their people were, but none quite like Goliath. It said he had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed in scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. Depending on the conversion, somewhere between 125 and 200 pounds of armor. Now just imagine wearing 200 pounds of armor and going into battle. For him to do so, it tells you just how big and strong he was. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. And the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam. By the way, a weaver's beam was about a 4x4. So the weaver's beam would have been something that his shaft of just this spear. And then he goes on and he says, the head of the spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. That's about 16 pounds, the same as a shot put. So put a shot put at the end of a 4x4 and you understand what it is he can throw. You get an idea of just how big he is. And then probably the most humorous and unknown character of the story, the shield carrier also walked before him. You see, he didn't carry his own shield. Now, this guy had to be relatively strong because I imagine that's a really big shield. And so his job was to carry it in front of Goliath. Now notice, and he stood and he shouted at the ranks of Israel and he said to them, "Why do you come out and draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. And if he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us." And again, the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." And when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. The first point is this. The giants of your life are defiant. They are defiant to you. You see, your giants don't carry a shield or a javelin. They're not 9 feet 9 inches tall. They're different. Your giants are things like a marriage hanging by a thread, unemployment, abandonment, sexual abuse, depression. That's your giants. They're different, but they're just as defiant. Each and every day, they try to define you as they engage you. Well, the change season changes now. The scene changes in verse 12. And it says, "Now David was the son of an Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse. And he had 8 sons. And Jesse was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years among men. And the 3 older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to the battle. And the names of the 3 sons who went into battle were Eliab, the firstborn, the 2nd was Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shammah." Now, you remember just a chapter or 2 earlier when Samuel went to the house of Jesse because God told him he would anoint the next king of Israel there. When he saw Eliab, he said, "That's got to be the guy. He's impressive." We'll see how impressive in a little while. And David was the youngest. Now, the 3 oldest followed Saul. But David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. And the Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days, and he took his stand. 40 days he comes forward, morning and evening. The giants of our life are also relentless. They don't go away. They're there every day. And until you engage them and defeat them, they're just going to be there. And we try all kinds of ways to sort of mash that. You know, we try some kind of passive escapism. For some of us, it's found in a bottle or medication or drugs or some way that we won't have to deal with the giants. But they're there every morning. And saw Goliath was there. And then Jesse said to David, his son, he said, "Take now," he said, "for your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to your brothers." He wants to give them food, a quarter pounder and fries and things that keep them going. And he said, "And bring also these 10 cubits of cheese to the commander of their 1,000. And he says, "And look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them." Now watch this. "For Saul and they and all the men of Israel are in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines." Apparently, the media of their day was just as poor as the media of today. There's no one fighting. There's no one fighting at all. But apparently, Saul was sending out press releases of how the battle was raging and how the armies of Israel were fighting the armies of the Philistines. No such thing was happening. The point of this section is just how relentless Goliath is, day after day after day. You see, that's the way it is with giants. There are bills you can't pay. There are grades you can't make. There are people you can't please. There is booze you can't resist. There's pornography you can't refuse. There's criticism that you cannot escape. There's a past that you can't shake. There's a future that you can't face. That's the giants. They come day after day after day. Well, not only are they defiant and restless, but now we begin to learn something here, and that is the giants have got to be put into perspective. So David arose early in the morning, and he left the flock with the keeper and took the supplies and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. Now, let me tell you what that is. Hypocrisy. You see, that's nothing but hypocrisy. Every day they'd get all dressed up and all their stuff, and then on their way to the edge of the mountain to look down into the valley, they would do their big war cry thing. And then they would stand in terror as Goliath is tormenting them, snarling at them. Well, and Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. And David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper, and he ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. You can imagine a 15 or so year old boy. He wants to see this. He has been told by everybody the battle is raging. He said, I want to see what a battle looks like. Well, there's no battle. There's just one big man. And he was talking with them. Behold, the champion of the Philistines from Gath named Goliath, and don't miss this, was coming up from the army of the Philistines. And he spoke these same words, and David heard them. Now remember, before they were doing it from one side to the other, then Goliath came down into the valley. And now Goliath, for 42 days, is walking toward Israel. And now he's coming up the other side. He's getting closer and closer and closer. Notice, when all the men of Israel saw the man, what a great play on words. When all the men saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. Now, can you imagine that scene? David's there, there's all these guys. He gets over to the edge. He wants to look down. He sees Goliath. He looks around, and guys are running. The army of Israel is running. Wow. And the men of Israel said to David, have you seen this man who's coming up? I mean, look at the man. That's why, by the way, what your friends always tell you. Have you seen your giant? Have you seen the problem? Do you realize what tough shape you're in? You see, it turns out to be a matter of perspective. Well, then they said this to David, surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And then apparently Saul's already been at work. It says, and it will be that the king, that's Saul, the man who legitimately, by the way, should be fighting Goliath. Remember, Saul was picked to be king because he was the tallest, the biggest, the most king-like. He's the guy that's supposed to be fighting, but he's not. But he's got a deal. It says, and it will come about that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches. This is three bonuses are going to be given to you if you will kill Goliath. The first one is the king is going to make you rich. And then he says, and he will give him his daughter. And thirdly, he will make his father's house free in Israel. No taxes. Now, that sounds pretty amazing. Great wealth, his daughter, no taxes. But see, it's like a sandwich. But you have to look inside the sandwich to see where it's not so good. You see, right in the middle of those two wonderful things, a lot of wealth and tax-free, the daughter of Saul, Micah, she is a drag. Okay, he slipped that in on everybody. No one in their right mind would want Micah for a wife, but that's going to be part of the deal, this great deal that you get. Saul's come up with it. He wants to kill two birds with one stone here. And then David spoke to the men who were standing by, and he said, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? He says, for who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? What a lesson for us. You see, the giants of our lives have to be put in perspective. Notice that David never calls him a giant. Notice that David doesn't say anything about him. Wow, look at that shield. Look at that helmet. Look at that javelin. Look at that sword. David sees him for what he is. He's an uncircumcised Philistine who is now in the Valley of Elah, which belongs to Judah. And he is taunting the armies of the living God. He didn't say army. He said armies. You see, David understands how God has protected Israel in the past. He has used angelic armies. He has used earthquakes. He has used fire from heaven. He has opened up a sea and then collapsed it on him. And he says, this uncircumcised Philistine taunting the armies of the living God? You see, David saw more than a giant. And David heard more than a giant. No one else even mentioned God in this story. The men of Israel, Saul, no one even mentions God. You ever notice that when you get all preoccupied with a giant in your life? You talk to your friends and they all talk about the giant. Oh, I don't know how you're ever going to deal with this. I don't know how you're ever going to be able to deal with that. You see, what ends up happening is that we get our eyes completely off God. David has a completely different perspective. David continues this whole story to see things differently than the people around him. David sees what others don't, and he refuses to see what the others do. You see, this army was majoring in Goliath. David majors in God. He said, that's all I see. And the people answered him in accord with his word, saying, thus it will be done for him who kills the man. Now, at a moment like this, when you're really facing a giant, you can always count on your family. And in verse 28, his brother gets involved. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And you think he would have said, wow, am I convicted? My younger brother's right. This is just an uncircumcised Philistine. And we are part of the armies of the living God. Well, not exactly. Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke this to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David. You can always count your family. He's now angry at David. And he says, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? The shepherd boy. He didn't even give him credit for being a good shepherd, which he was. You have a few sheep. He says, I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle. You know what you call that? Projection. Whose heart's wicked? Where's the insolence? He's projecting his own feelings onto his younger brother. You gotta love David, though. David said to him, what have I done now? Was it not just a question? You see, you only want to fight the real giant. You don't want to fight with the advice. He didn't want to fight with his brothers. He didn't see it that way. And then he turned away from him to another and said the same thing, and the people answered the same thing as before. And when the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. Kind of another scene change again. Notice, David has now put Goliath in a perspective that no one else has. Saul hears about it. In his whole army, there's one shepherd boy who has decided that he would talk that way about him. So Saul says, bring him to me. So David says to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Just straightforward as could be. Hey, look, I know a lot of guys are running and screaming. You know, everybody's sort of shaking. I'll go do it. Now you think that would be so embarrassing for the king of Israel. Saul says to David, look, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. He said, for you are but a youth, and he has been a warrior from his youth. I mean, didn't you see his varsity jacket, that big G on it? This guy's been in this stuff before. You know, that's this guy. This guy is something. Ever since he was little, which might not have been that little, you know, ever since he was a youth, he's been killing guys. David said to Saul, hey, look, your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion and or a bear came and took the lamb from the flock, and I went out after him, and I attacked him, and I rescued it from his mouth, and when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard, and I struck him, and I killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. David says, don't underestimate me. I've done this before. I've killed a lion and a bear. Not many shepherds would do that. And by the way, notice, David killed him for one reason. They do what lion and bears do. They took one of the flock. He said, you're not taking one of my sheep. And so he went and he killed it. He said, I'm not afraid. Then he says this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them. Why? Since he has taunted the armies of the living God. You see, it's not because, hey, check out my muscles. He says, look, I'm on the right side of this thing. Since he has taunted the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And maybe the most disingenuous words in the Bible. And Saul said to him, go, and may the Lord be with you. All right. You'd think he'd have been ashamed of himself, king of Israel. Saul said to David, go and may the Lord be with you. And then Saul clothed David with his garments, and he put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with his armor. And David girded the sword over his armor, and he tried to walk. Saul's a 52 long. David's a 36 short. So Saul puts the helmet down over probably his face, gives him his stuff, and then David's trying to walk in it. He says, you can use my stuff. By the way, there's a very important point there for people just like you and me. And that is this. You have to fight your giants with your resources. You see, you have to fight your giants with your resources. You can't fight giants with other resources. No matter what happens, it's up to you. It's not up to somebody else. We always think I can get somebody else to do this, but they won't. In the end, it always comes down to you. You see, couples think if we really get good counseling, that'll do it, but in the end, that'll only come down to them. Man, if you fight addictions or alcoholism or something, it's going to come down to you. It always comes down to you. If you're short on finances and you really need someone to get yourself financially straight, it's going to come down to you. You don't fight your giants with somebody else's resources. Wow. Notice after he tried to walk, he says, for he had not tested him. And David said to Saul, I cannot go with these. He says, for I have not tested him. And David took them off. Well, the scene changes again. And this time we get a little bit closer to what's going on. And he took his stick in his hand and he chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook. That's where we started. You see, David has what would probably be about 10 to 12 inch, usually wood, wrapped in leather, stick, gives it stability, and wrapped around it and in a long sling from it of leather. And you put the stone in it, and then you spin it, and then you let it go. Now, by the way, let me tell you something about that, because you know the way the story goes. But some time ago on, I believe it was Mythbusters, they had a sling. And they wanted to see whether that could really do that kind of damage. And those guys, who are not experts with it, were able to sling a stone 135 miles an hour with that type of sling. Well, by the way, I think you get an idea then. That's pretty formidable whenever you throw a nice big round rock at that kind of speed. Well, anyway, he goes and he chooses five smooth stones from the brook. People have often asked, why five? Lots of us like the idea because five is a representative number of grace, and it could be representing the grace of God. It may also be that David just felt like, hey, if I miss four times, I still have one, you know? So I don't know exactly. And he put them in his shepherd's bag, which he had, even his pouch, and his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. Understand what he teaches us here about dealing with our giants. You see, we get so passive, we wait for the bad news to always come to us. We never approach it. David's now approaching. Could you imagine what the armies on both sides are saying? Wait, he's down there at the brook. He's picked up some... Where is he going? He's walking toward Goliath. You know, and the Philistines are laughing, and I'm sure the Israelites are like looking through their fingers like, oh my goodness, what is he up to? Now watch. When the Philistine looked and saw David coming toward him, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? Remember, he's used to seeing swords and javelins, armor. This kid's got a little leather stick. Philistine cursed David by his gods. He called him dirty names. What is this? Trash talk. You see, he's giving him trash talk, and he's trying to intimidate him. And I would imagine most people Goliath has roared curses from his gods at turned around and ran. And this is not most people. The Philistine also said to David, you come to me, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the sky and to the beasts of the field. You're going to die today. In an hour or so, they're going to be eating your carcass. Come on. David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. You got nothing. You see, how does David do that? You see, not only does he take you take a giant on with your own resources, but in the end, it always comes down to your faith in God. You see, God is honoring David's faith in God. Is Goliath formidable? Absolutely. These men of Israel have seen him. They know what he can do. And if you compare Goliath to a typical man, there is no comparison. But David doesn't do that. He compares Goliath to God. You see, when you think of your problems, your challenges, your giants, you compare them to the advice of your Uncle Eddie, who said, I don't think this is going to work out. Do you compare that challenge to God? You see, do you compare your giant to God? That's what David does. That's why to him he's nothing but an uncircumcised Philistine. Nothing more, nothing else. Notice then, David says in verse 46, this day, here's his faith, this day, the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I will strike you down. I will remove your head from you. And then I think he looks up to the whole group and yells out, and I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and to the wild beasts of the earth. This day I will kill you. I will cut off your head. And all of you guys are going to die today. What would you be thinking if you were there? What is wrong with him? You see, the next phrase is one of the most important in the whole story. Why are there giants in our life? Why do we have these challenges? He says that all the earth may know that there's a God in Israel. Why is Goliath so big? So all the earth will know there's a God in Israel. Why was Pharaoh so powerful? So all the earth would know there's a God in Israel. Why are the problems in your life so great? So everyone around you will know there's a God in your life. You see, that's it. That's why giants are allowed in our life. Goliath never had to be born. You see, that would have never been an issue if God didn't want an issue, but Goliath is a tool. He says, in that all this assembly, talking to the believers, the Israelites behind him, may know that the Lord does not deliver by the sword or by the spear, for the battle is the Lord's and he will give you into our hands. You see, that's why the Apostle Paul said, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. The battle's the Lord's. You see, if it's financial, the battle's the Lord's. If it's sinful sin that you're dealing with, the battle is the Lord's. If it's a marriage you're trying to save, the battle is the Lord's. If it's the idea of trying to get your children on the right track, the battle is the Lord's. You see, it's a matter of what are you seeing? Are you seeing the giant or are you seeing the Lord? Are you trusting what everybody else says or are you trusting what God says? David's got it. Boy, and all of a sudden we get to verse 48. When you get to verse 48, you're expecting, because there was so much of preliminary stuff. But you know what it's going to be like? It's going to be like when you hear that the greatest heavyweight fight of all time is going to be on pay-per-view. And then you get all of your friends together and you fork in a bunch of money each so you can get a pay-per-view viewing. And then there's all the preliminary stuff and all the preliminary fights and all that goes and you're all right there. You're ready to go. And then the bell rings. They walk out to the middle. A guy throws a right hand. It's all over. And you go home. $80 out. That's what happens here. See, you're expecting something big, but watch what happens. And then it happened when the Philistine rose and came to draw near to meet David, that David ran quickly toward the Philistine in the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into the bag from the stone and he slung it and he struck the Philistine in the forehead and a stone sank into his forehead and so that he fell on his face to the ground. Over. One big roar, big guy running like this. Little guy runs like this, goes like that. I'm sure the Philistine army was just getting ready to roar like at the Superdome. Roar, and then all of a sudden it got quiet like, what? He's down. He's out. It happened that fast. You see, that's an amazing thing. Wouldn't it be something if we ran toward our giants with a God-filled soul in our lives, confident in God? We weren't afraid of them at all. We ran toward them. We're not afraid. The battle's the Lord's. You see, I'm not afraid. See, that's the whole idea. I'm not afraid. Wow. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Please understand something about this story. There's no miracle. You see, the Bible has a lot of miraculous stories. There's no miracle in this story. None. There's no parting of a sea. There's no fireballs from heaven. There's nothing like this. This is just a very accurate high-speed rock hitting a guy dead in between the eyes and the forehead, which would be fatal, even to a man that size. You see, the miracle is David. He's the miracle. He's a young man of faith. You get an idea of what a person of faith can really accomplish. By the way, humorous sidebar. Remember that Goliath would be running like this, as only he could. And he gets hit here, and he falls forward. Where's the shield bearer? Never knew probably what hit him. He's just running with a shield. Boom. Like having a tree fall on you. David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword. Could you imagine this? Now he's got this gigantic sword. I'm sure he can barely get his hands on it by dragging it. And he decides then to give it a windmill baseball swing. And he does. And it says, and he ran, he took his sword, and he drew it out of its sheath, and he killed him, and he cut off his head with it. Whoop. And then you see him, he just picks it up. It's got to be this big. And holds it. Now what do you think's happening on the two sides? He's like, what? There's his head. Probably with still the expression of total surprise on it. See, says, when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Wow. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. You resist the devil, he'll flee from you. You see, he fled. That's what happens when you mess around with the armies of the living God. You see, that's the whole thing of the living God. That's why Paul said, we are more than conquerors in Christ. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. By the way, there's some wonderful benefits here. It says then that the men of Israel and Judah rose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the valley of the gates of Ekron. And the slain Philistines lay along the way to Shazarim and even to Gath and to Ekron. And the sons of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and they plundered their camps. You know what happens when you destroy a giant by faith in your life? You encourage every other believer. They're all encouraged. They're galvanized now. Now they're ready to fight. Notice that they're strengthened. Wow! We can do this. The enemy is running, and others are encouraged. There's something else, though. It says, then David took the Philistine's head, and he brought it to Jerusalem. But he put his weapons in his tent. Trophy case. You see, whenever you overcome a giant in your life, keep a trophy case. It's good to look at. You see, no matter what David was facing, there was a time when you have to say, why, wait, can I do? Well, wait a minute. Take a look at that sword. God can do this. You see, when you've been through financial ruin and you've come out of it, keep it as a trophy case. When you thought your marriage was over and it went back together, keep it as a trophy case. You see, keep a trophy case to say, look what God has done in our life. Look at the things that have been accomplished. Wow. You know, there's one last thing here. We have seen that giants are defiant and relentless and have to be put in perspective. We can only fight them with our own resources. And we have to confront them by faith. But when we are victorious, boy, it encourages other believers. We should never forget it ourselves. Keep it as a trophy case. But something else was revealed to me in this time in this particular story. There's always been something said about David that I've struggled with. Maybe you have. In the book of Acts, Dr. Luke says, David, God speaking, is a man after my own heart. David is a man after God's own heart. I don't know if that's ever bothered you or you've ever thought about it, but Abraham was never called a man after God's own heart. Moses was never called a man after God's own heart. Joseph was not called a man after God's own heart. Daniel was not called a man after God's own heart. The Apostle Paul was not called a man after God's own heart. The Apostle John was called beloved, but not a man after God's own heart. Just David. And you see, the reason that's so puzzling to me is I know about him. I've studied his life. I've taught his life. You see, God loved the heart of David, but it's a checkered heart. You see, there's something about David that if you're one of these type A Christians that think there's a matter of Christian perfection, then David is really tough for you. Now, if you're like the rest of us who really struggle with your life going up and down, swan dives and then belly flops, you know, David's our guy. You know, because that's the way David is. I mean, he fell as often as he stood. He stumbled often as after he had conquered. He stared down Goliath, and yet he ogled Bathsheba. He defied the God mockers in the valley, and he joined the God mockers in the wilderness. One day, a boy scout, and the next day, a bad boy. He led armies, and he couldn't manage his own family. Eight wives, one God. That's the heart that God so loved. You see, there's something about David's focus in life, his ability to deal with his own inadequacies that make him so special to God. You see, even in this story, you reveal David at his best. You know, when I went through this story, David only even thinks about the giant twice. He only describes him one way. He's an uncircumcised Philistine. That's it. He never talks about anything else about him. That's all he is. And yet, when David talks about or focuses on God here, he does it 9 times in this one chapter. 9 times he focuses on the power, the authority, and the ability of God. 4 times as many God thoughts as giant thoughts. Let me ask you, is that like you? Do you ponder God's grace 4 times more than your guilt? Do you ponder God's power 4 times more than your fear? Whenever you're facing a giant, is that your ratio? You see, do you count God's blessings when you're facing a giant, or do you think about your complaints? You see, which is more likely to describe you? You see, if you don't, then David's your man. Because David didn't always succeed either. But boy, he succeeded here. You see, when David didn't focus on God, David fell. When David focused on God, giants fell. When you don't focus on God, you fall. Whenever you do focus on God, the giants of your life, the challenges of your life, they tumble. God made a miracle out of David. And do you realize in this exact same way, God can make a miracle out of you as you face your giants? Let's pray. Father, I think so often the problem that we have is our familiarity with this great story. We've learned it since we've been children. And we make the mistake of thinking it's just about a young boy and a very big man. But Father, there's so much more here. As we take this snapshot and really look at it, and to see what it teaches to us, it teaches us so many wonderful principles, because all of us, Father, face giants. We have in our past, some of us are facing them now, and we all will face them in the future. We know that they are defiant, and we know that they are relentless. But this story of David and Goliath teaches us to keep them in perspective. Always compare our giant to our God. And Father, we are always to take the fight to the giant with our faith in you, that you will accomplish for us what we cannot accomplish for ourselves. We will be recipients once again of your grace and your power. Father, I pray that the next time any of us face a giant, we remember a shepherd boy named David. In his name we pray. Amen.